Now, the Coventry North East MP and Armed Forces Minister, Bob Ainsworth, joins me in the studio. Bob, thanks for coming in today. It's a very special day for the armed services. It's Veterans Day.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks.
Morning.
Thanks for being here.
Now, we've been told earlier by a veteran, I've been firmly put in my place. I said, why we got Veterans Day? We've already got Armistice Day. We see the parades. We see the tributes to the dead by the living. And it's a very moving thing. Veterans of World War II and Korea marching past, remembering their slain colleagues. Why do we have Veterans Day as well?
He slapped you down.
He said it's to celebrate. He said it's not
absolutely
to commemorate, it's
absolutely
to celebrate. But can you celebrate
remembers more? Well, you can celebrate the service of the people, you know, who have served in past conflicts on behalf of this country, and you know, that's a
well,
different...
Well, I'll do that on Armistice Day. I sit there very, very thankful.
Well, the ethos of Armistice Day is to remember the dead and the fallen, and therefore, you know, it quite rightly should be, you know, a sombre occasion when we're thinking of those people who lost their lives, you know, during service. Now, Veterans Day is designed and meant to be something different. We've got lots of veterans who've served this country at different stages, you know, in recent history, different conflicts that we've had, and in non-conflict situations, but nonetheless they served. They signed up for, you know, the extraordinary commitment that our armed forces do. And we just thought, you know, this being put to us by many people over a period of time, that required, you know, a separate occasion, you know, and a separate mood, you know, to it, where we actually celebrate the service, not the sacrifice of those who'd fallen, but the service of those who've participated.
Mm. Okay, I mean, I was thinking of my ancestors on Armistice Day, and they did serve. My great-grandfather was killed. My grandfathers, both of them, one served in the First World War, both in the Second World War. They weren't killed, but they were certainly, if not physically maimed, damaged by it. I still don't know if there's anything to celebrate about what happened to them in submarines in the Baltic or in Africa, North Africa, from the stories that I heard. Anyway, let's
I mean, you're right. I mean, there are people who suffer as a result of their service, particularly when they've been through traumatic experiences. But
yeah,
look, I mean, if you go to a Remembrance Day service or to Veterans Day today, you'll see lots of vets, you know, who are, you know, playing a fantastic role in the community, you know, in their, you know, in civilian life, in employment and everything else. So, I mean, you know, this idea that ex-servicemen are victims, I mean, is totally the wrong idea. You know, they come out of the services, some of them, with tremendous skills, tremendous capability. They're snatched up by employers in some circumstances, and they play a fantastic role. So there is, you know, I mean, yes, you're right. You know, we have to recognise that damage is done to some people because of the traumatic experiences that they, you know, they go through. But that's not the whole picture, by any means.
I'm not detracting for 1 minute from the pride and the sense of achievement of those men that will be marching today. Anyway, two 20-year-olds in Afghanistan, they're so young, aren't they?
Yes.
Is that because our armed forces are very young now, generally speaking?
Well, they always have been.
Or just get the young ones that are being slain.
Our armed forces have always been filled, certainly at the lower ranks, with younger people who, you know, who join them, particularly, you know, voluntary armed forces at times of national crisis when we've had a, you know, a call-up and national service in the past. Then obviously that's got, you know, even deeper into the population and higher up the, you know, the age scale. So young men who died, you know, whether it's, you know, the Falklands or, you know, the first Gulf War, you know, or our current operations, you know, they tend to be, you know, these young people like Jeff Doherty.
Okay, well, we'll talk more, Bob, about these two deaths and the current conflicts shortly. Thanks for agreeing to stay a bit longer. We'll just catch up with the headlines now. It's 19 past 8. Bob Ainsworth, MP, is with me in the studio, as also Armed Forces Minister. We've had 11 soldiers killed. It's been a bloody month in Helmand Province since the start of June. Two from Warwickshire in the last fortnight. We can't sustain this, can we?
Well, I mean, let me first of all express my, you know, deepest condolences and sympathy to the family of Jeff Doherty and those other families who lost their loved ones recently. We have, and I'm sure that the kind of support that's being shown in Southam will be some, you know, some support, you know, to them as they come to terms with, you know, the dreadful thing that's happened. You know, we've had an increase in the numbers of deaths. The nature of the conflict in Afghanistan has changed over the last year or so, and we've seen different tactics being used by the Taliban, and the fact that we've lost the numbers of people can give people the impression that we're not making progress. That's not true. I mean, we were seeing a year ago circumstances where the Taliban were attacking the British Army head on, in major armed conflicts. They've shifted now to terrorist tactics, and they've shifted to terrorist tactics because we've effectively destroyed their capability to a large extent, not completely, and you can never underestimate them, but destroyed, really degraded their capability to take us on and, you know, to confront us.
Well, it's more lethal, though, isn't it? Terrorist tactics seem to be killing more people.
All the time the enemy will change their tactics in an attempt, you know, to wear us down and to persuade us that the fight is not one that we should continue. That is, they are a sophisticated enemy. That is what they are about. Now, what we need to bear in mind is, can we afford not to be in Afghanistan? And I know that there
Bob, can I just ask you to answer? Okay, we'll come on to that in a minute. The ethos of the conflict and the morality of it and the military objectives. But my question was, 11 men and 10 men and one woman killed this month. Can we afford that kind of damage to our forces? The sheer numbers, I mean, the sheer throughput, so it's like a sausage factory. We're not recruiting that fast, are we?
Well, I mean, Liz, you know, this has been a bad couple of weeks. I don't deny that it has been, you know, a bad couple of weeks. And we have got to, you know, look repeatedly at the tactics and the methods that we're using in order to try to reduce to the absolute minimum. You can't take risk out of war fighting situations. You can never take it out in its entirety. But we've got to look at what we're doing, the way that we're doing it, the equipment that we're using, the methods that we're using, and try constantly to react to the tactics and the capability of the enemy in order to keep our casualties to a minimum.
Yeah, and yesterday you announced 70-odd new protective vehicles, but I'm talking about human beings. You know, the British forces, as I understand it, you're the minister, please correct me if I'm wrong, are becoming rapidly reduced, aren't they?
Well, I mean, that's we have difficulty with retention. I mean, the difficulties that we have with retaining the skilled people that we have got is something that we're trying to address, you know, through a number of methods. We're paying, you know, retention bonuses. We're trying to make sure that we're giving people a proper welfare package when they're away, you know, on operations, improving the welfare package. And I'm doing a piece of work now where we're looking at, you know, the way that different aspects of public service across the whole of government affect the families of our armed service personnel, so that we can keep the skills that we've got. We have not got huge problems recruiting. There are problems recruiting into the infantry and into the Marines, you know, the high... the real front end, of the armed forces, but there is recruitment is holding up reasonably well.
Okay, I know you're short of time, and we're going to have to wrap in a minute. So I'm going to ask you a direct question.
Yep.
The British government is telling us that we're in it for the long haul in Afghanistan. This isn't a short conflict. We've a job to do there for 10 years, maybe decades.
We can't sort Afghanistan out in short order.
So we agree on that. And we've no sort of real time frame for the end of the conflict in Iraq. And yet we're not having major volunteers in major numbers coming forward for our armed forces. I've asked this before. Are we going to see, if this conflict continues, and I'm a mother of two lads, are we going to see conscription in order to keep things going?
No. The kind of armed forces that we want now, we don't want people, who are forced into them. We need a professional and capable armed forces, which we've got. And we have to base that on the voluntary principle. I mean, there is no point in doing other words. There is no doubt, and I'm not denying, that the armed forces are stretched with two separate operations ongoing. We've reduced the troop numbers in Iraq. I can't give people some kind of artificial timescale when we'll be out of Iraq. But we've achieved an awful lot. The Iraqi armed forces themselves are now of a capability, partly as a result of the training that we've managed to give them, that they were never at a year or so ago. So they are taking on a number of the tasks that we were doing ourselves a long time ago. They went back into Basra town, sorted out the militias. They are doing an awful lot of the work, you know, because of the capability that we have helped to give them. Now, our withdrawal from Iraq has to be based on the conditions. When the Iraqis are able to cope, you know, we will not keep people there for any time longer than is necessary. But what we will not do is commit to some, you know, set timescale.
No, no.
You know, that we might not be able...
You're not going to call up my boys then. That's all I wanted to know. Because I tell you what, you're not having them. And if I've told them both that if that ever happened, I'd take them straight into the garden, get the axe out, the wood axe, and I'd chop the toe, big, each of them a big toe off so they couldn't go. That's me as a mother. What do you say to the two mothers of Jeff Doherty and Joe Whittaker in Southam and Stratford?
Look, I can only express my sympathies and condolences and say to them that I think that their sons, you know, died, you know, serving the nation in a very important theatre of operations, doing a job that they wanted to do, and we all should be very, very proud, not only of what they did, of what they've sacrificed, but the enormous capability that them and their colleagues have got.
Brave lads. Okay, one last thing before you go, because it's been brought up this morning on the show. Why aren't you going in taking out Mugabe? You would have done in the past, wouldn't you? Is that because we're too stretched? There's a regime that needs changing.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, people, there's always an instant kind of, you know, something must be done and we should be the ones to do it. Zimbabwe is in the middle of Africa, one of the biggest continents on earth. You know, who would give us access to that country?
Zambia?
Is it right? I'm not so sure that they would. You know, is it right that we take on that responsibility? What responsibilities do Zimbabwe's neighbours have? Some of those neighbours have been very, very slow even to criticise Mugabe. Never mind, you know, do anything about it. Until recently, they haven't even been prepared to criticise him. He's been doing what he's doing now for a very long time. It's getting worse. They're starting to criticise him. But, you know, his African neighbours have responsibilities too, and we would try to help in any way, if it was diplomatic, you know, or anything else, you know, the pressure that they would put on to this appalling Zimbabwean regime.
OK, so if South Africa marches in, we'll support that. OK, Bob, I know you have to go. Thank you for a very interesting conversation. And thank you for coming in on Veterans Day when we not only remember those from previous conflicts, but those conflicts taking place right now, and for one of them whose funeral is taking place today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.